Welcome to Radio at Firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters. Firehouse.com brings you the leaders of the nation's fire, rescue, and EMS services, the top columnists and educators, and today's most important issues, headlines, and comments. Listen right on your desktop or download and listen on the go to Firehouse.com.
Hello and welcome to Radio at Firehouse.com. My name is Peter Matthews, and I'm here today with Brian Vickers, our senior grant writer. We're here to talk about the 2007 Fire Act grant, the Assistance to Firefighter Grant Program. Just last week, round 19 of the grant program was announced, and with that, $33 million, or very close to that, was awarded to 317 departments throughout the United States. We have a deadline coming up soon, and we just wanted to kind of get some information out there to all of our listeners about some things that you should know about this year's program, some changes from years past. And Brian, having been a grant writer for several years, has a lot of insight into common problems found in applications being submitted throughout the country. Brian, let's start off with a little bit of information on what's new with this year. I know so far 19 rounds have come out. All the denials, I believe, have been sent out. What else do we have coming up for the rest of this year?
We're only looking at about two to three more awards worth. As you mentioned, all the denials are out, so all the pending information's out. Everybody that pretty much knows the results at this point about their 2006 application, so it'll be good. It's nice that we get it all before the application period started, so we can tell whether or not we've got to make some changes for 2006 on our applications for those that didn't get it. And of course, those that are getting it know we've got to work on something else also, because once we get our application awarded, we've got to find something else to go after money for. But just to recap some of the common downfalls and stuff that we've seen, a lot of it still is a lack of assessments. People are applying for things that they're either already compliant with as far as the NFPA standards going. NFPA compliance, of course, is a priority in the program. And if you're already compliant in something, there certainly isn't a need compared to somebody that isn't compliant. And even for people that aren't compliant right now with NFPA, whether it be their bunker gear, air packs, or otherwise, what they're applying for will not bring them 100% to NFPA compliance. And of course, they're certainly not going to fund an incomplete solution for people. If you've got a need for 30 sets of bunker gear, applying for 10 isn't going to solve your problem. You're still going to have a safety and compliance issue. You've got to apply for everything that you need. And of course, that's need, not want. It's a lot of people are getting greedy in their applications and just trying to pile things on and pile things on and going for laundry list applications. And that changes the score around so much, because you've got so many different projects. Regardless of the high priority bunker gear you may have in there, anything else you throw in there after that, of course, is going to bring your average score down, because bunker gear is the highest priority. Everything after that is weighted less than that, so the more things you throw in that are a lower priority than your true need, the lower your score is going to get. And we've seen this year as well, actually started last year a couple times, but even more this year, people that were awarded for something in the first couple years of the AFG, they're applying for the same thing again. People that went for bunker gear and got it awarded in 2001 or 2002, now they're going after bunker gear again, saying, oh, it's 5 years old, I need it again. Anything these grant programs fund, they expect you to be able to take and fix on your own from here on out. The grant program is just a quick boost. Here you go, we'll bring you up to compliance. Now you've got to figure out a replacement program. Now you've got to go off and handle these things for yourself. And of course, certainly there's minor changes where people have left or people have joined or you've hired some extra people. So whereas you had 20 people before, now you've got 30. They expect at any point they give you an award for something that those kind of changes are going to happen every year. They expect us to be able to take that and handle it locally on our own and not continually depend on the grant programs from here on out. And one of the big things that got a lot of people denied before was not doing their closeout reports on previous awards. We basically got 12 months from the date of award to get things handled, to order everything we said we were going to order, spend all the money, get everything in, make the reports and say, we're done, we're complete, it's over with. And a lot of people, they may have very well spent all their money, but they didn't do the closeout reports. So $1,000 is still open. We had a few people this year that were in line for their 2006 award, never did their closeout, never responded to DHS, and basically they ended up getting denied in the end because they didn't do what they were supposed to do. It's in the guidelines, which is, of course, federal law, that you must close out your previous awards before you get the next one. And, of course, the exception to that is if your performance period is still live from a 2005 award, then, of course, you didn't have to do your closeout by then. But there are some people with open 2004 and 2003 awards that were supposed to have been closed out, you know, anywhere from 2 to 3 years ago. And without completing the obligations on those grants, you're not going to get a next one. So, I mean, that's certainly an important thing to do, is follow the guidelines. You know, and that lends into how people put their projects together, is that people didn't read the guidelines. A few ineligible projects here and there, instant denials. They don't even make it past the computer on this one. People that were going for low-cost benefit, I mean, very expensive, large custom apparatus when you cover, 500 to 1,000 people. It's not that the truck's not needed, but that's where some of the assessments come in to show that, you're looking for something that costs, $150 to $200 per resident in your district. That cost benefits way off versus somebody that's going to solve their problem for $50 to $60 a resident. We see a lot of that in vehicles where people want the custom truck, but the commercial costs a whole lot less and still solves the same problem. So a lot of times we find that people have to back down from the gold standard or the platinum standard and get something that will still fix the problem, but not be a cheap piece of junk. It's it's important to solve the problem, but there's a limit to a cost benefit calculation. And I said it's not saying that what they're applying for isn't needed. It's just that when people solve the similar problems for a lot less money, they've got a greater cost benefit calculation, so they will score higher. And certainly when people come in with low priority projects compared to what what the rest of the country needs. Standalone training, distance learning are not huge priorities if that's the only focus of the application, compared to people that need bunker gear, air packs, or otherwise. I mean, there's a need for every department, and of course assessments are going to point us to picking out the right project and make sure that we can pick off a high priority project. But I tell a lot of people, once you get, if you've got decent vehicles, good bunker gear, plenty of handheld radios for fire ground communications, good air packs, a couple of thermal imagers, you're pretty well off compared to a lot of departments in this country. So it's just a lot of managing expectations that, okay, you're not as big of a need as a lot of these other departments, so it's kind of temper the expectations of the applicant that, this isn't a huge need according to the grant program. But that just means we've got to back it up that much more on why this is the highest priority need that the department has compared to the fire service. Every application has to be about each department and what they need, not what is the fire service in need in general. And that's where we see a lot of people, especially when they come to their narrative, is just full of national statistics and, this happened over, on the other side of the country. It's got to be about what do you need and why do you need it. It's not, each grant application is you versus the guidelines and the priorities, not where is the fire service at. There's certainly some common themes. Like most rural departments need a decent brush vehicle because they're handling, they've got open space. They're usually handling wildland fires. But that's just the generality. If you're applying for a brush truck, it's got to be why do you need a specific brush truck, not why does a rural department need a fire truck. And, of course, going into vehicles themselves, there's a lot of competition in there. So a lot of deserving applications never make it past the computer, and a lot of deserving applications don't get funded every year. So certainly, you know, it's a competitive program. There's a whole lot of applications. There's not enough money to handle all those problems. And that's why if you are going to go after a vehicle, it's got to be the right vehicle for that department, and we paint the need as best we can. And of course, if we don't get it, that doesn't mean that they disagreed with our need. If the assessment was done properly and the application was done properly, there may not be a need to reinvent the wheel coming into the next year with a denial.
Now, when you talk about apparatus and the need, you know, on a local basis, what about something on a regional basis or a countywide basis, for instance, a hazmat team or a technical rescue team? You know, if any town is looking to purchase a technical rescue vehicle to support County A, is that something that's going to go through the grant process? Or
rescue-only vehicles are a low priority for suburban and rural departments. Urban departments, which basically fit about 2,500 residents per square mile on density, among other factors within that, still works on calculation of open space and things like that to determine who's urban and who's suburban and who's rural. But a rescue-only truck is only a priority one. So anybody beyond that, if you're suburban or rural, there is no chance at a rescue-only vehicle. They're priority two, and just because of competition, only priority one vehicles are making it all the way to peer review. There's just too many priority one requests that a priority two won't score high enough to make it that far. So in that case, we've got to look. Okay, we still need to make our technical rescue team mobile. We still need our equipment mobile. That's where you look at a trailer solution, because that's not a vehicle. At that point, it's a piece of equipment. There's three times as much money there. There's three times better chance of getting funded for something that solves the problem versus going after a vehicle. But there's other ways to go with regional applications for other things. They're not just communications bound. Interoperability is certainly a big push and a big keyword in the AFG, but it's not just limited to communications. You can do that with air packs. I mean, a fire ground is only as safe as the most unsafe situation there. You know, it's great if one department's got new air packs, but if every department around them has 15, 20-year-old air packs and they're different brands, you know, they're incompatible, they don't have the RIC connections, you don't have a very safe fire ground, because if one person goes down from Department A, Department B is expected to get them out. They don't have the equipment or the interoperability of their air packs to be able to make that a safe operation. So it's certainly, you know, if one department needs air packs or two or three departments need air packs, going in with a regional application shows that interoperability is already there. That's the goal. They're looking to pre-plan, essentially, and solve everyone's problems at once, realizing that just one department with new air packs doesn't make the region any safer. So we can move, you know, any equipment or any parts of the application, if awarded, would go to each individual department, can be regional. Vehicles can't be regional. Things like a trailer mounted compressor cascade is not regional because it's only going to be sitting in one spot. But there were several this year. There was one out of Mississippi where the entire county went for regional bunker gear because everybody in the county needed bunker gear. There were several others that went for air packs. The whole county got new air packs. And of course, communications-wise, there were several large regional communications grants to upgrade the system, whether it be to 800 megahertz or VHF, whatever the plan was, to be able to make sure that everyone in the county can talk to each other. Certainly makes it tougher on large-scale incidents when you've got to have four or five people to command post saying the same order across five different radios just to make sure they can talk to everybody. You still don't want to go out and just throw a regional application together thinking that's going to score points as well. It's still keys to the assessment process. It's got to be a need for the region, and it's got to be a viable solution for that. And it's still goes to cost benefit. There's a limit, whether you're regional or not, that there's a certain dollar amount that's a whole lot of money to pump in for a specific solution to a smaller area, even if it is a region. So the assessments are still key. You can't just throw out, say, hey, we're going to take this regional. If it doesn't make sense for the individual departments, it's certainly not going to make sense for a region either. Regardless of whether it is a regional or an individual application, what we're seeing funded over and over again is small, focused projects, handling one problem at a time. Certainly, even if you do an assessment and you realize that, well, we need new bunker gear, everything we have is 15 years old, or air packs are 15 years old, and we don't have a thermal imager, and we don't have enough radios for each two firefighter teams, so we can't talk on an average operation. Even though those are all needs and the assessment pointed it to that, there's still a cost benefit and a focus issue of we've got to handle one thing at a time. I tell a lot of people, if you need bunker gear, it's the number one priority. We know anything else we include is weighted lower. If we need bunker gear that badly, do we really want to take the chance of throwing other things in on top of that and possibly dropping the score down to the point that we don't get awarded? That happens a lot with air packs and bunker gear. They are the top two needs and top two priorities in the program. But based on cost benefit and based on focus of project, some people can't apply for both at the same time. We've got to split it, and it's better to fund two projects 2 years in a row than get zero each year asking for too much at a time. And of course, the holistic benefit there is the less each person asks for, the smaller the awards, more problems get solved, because we are still looking at about $550 million in this year's program. So when people ask for an average of less money, there's more awards that go out, the benefit stretches a little bit. So we also, we can solve more problems, one, by staying focused, that gives us a better chance to get awarded, two, smaller amounts of money for each individual on average means more awards to go out.
All right, Brian, let's take a quick break here, take a word from our sponsor, which is Plumevent, and we'll come right back. And if anybody has any questions or comments or suggestions for this podcast, please drop us an email to podcast@firehouse.com. Thank you.
This presentation is proudly sponsored by Plumevent. Plumevent is a driving force in advancing firefighter health and safety. Plumevent's diesel exhaust removal systems feature 100% source capture to eliminate all diesel exhaust from the firehouse, as stated in NFPA 1500. Plumevent diesel exhaust removal systems meet the requirements stated in the Fire Act Grant Program guidance for modifications to facilities. Visit plumevent.com or click on the link on this page to learn more about their exhaust removal systems.
Radio at firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters.
Welcome back to Radio at Firehouse.com. We have Brian Vickers here with us today. He's our senior grant writer. And Brian, I'm just looking on the firegrantsupport.com website, and it says here that the March 5th application period has been postponed temporarily. Any word on what may be going on there, and does that push the deadline back?
Yeah, it was supposed to open today, March 5th. Was the planned opening, but they did make several changes, administrative changes of the program, so they're still working on the program guidance, trying to get that out. And of course, they don't want to open the application period without the guidance being published and available for people. Certainly on the back end as well, they had to make several administrative changes with the online application to make the changes fit and make sure that they don't have any issues. They don't want to release the application if there's going to be problems with people saving and things like that, so it's easier at this point just to make sure that everything works and everybody's got the information before it opens up. So we'll probably see a week just to make things round. At a minimum, they'll postpone it until the 12th, perhaps later, but of course they want to make sure it works, which is good for us. They don't want to, people having problems in the first couple weeks of the application period and then just have it sitting open for 7 or 8 weeks. It's still going to be open for 5 weeks, basically 30 days, a Monday until 5 weeks later on a Friday sometime April. They do allow some flexibility in their schedule with peer review coming in after that. So if it is a week, shouldn't see any issues. But, everybody wants to keep their eyes peeled on firegrantsupport.com. And if you're not on the mailing list for that, make sure you get it. And as soon as any updates are made, they'll send an email out immediately and update the website, and we'll be able to start moving. And just to highlight a few of the changes that were made this year for people who weren't able to get to the DHS workshops. They made the change. If you've been awarded a vehicle before in the past couple of years, you could only be awarded one vehicle. But they made the change now. If you've been awarded a vehicle before, you can now apply for another vehicle again. Certainly realizing that, you know, if you've got a 35-year-old pumper, tanker, and brush truck, you can get one. That doesn't mean your other two trucks certainly don't need replacement. So it's still, again, if you've got the need for it, apply for it and make sure you apply for the right truck. But, of course, there is no computer scoring against anyone that's been awarded a vehicle before, just for that reason, because, you know, each type of vehicle has its own merits. But we have to understand on the flip side, someone reviewing the applications, if you make it through peer review, you have to understand that, okay, you've been given one vehicle before, you may score slightly lower than somebody that hasn't won a vehicle before. So there is the chance. If you need it, apply for it. This is all about needs. And the advantage this year is one of the other administrative changes they've made is that you can apply for equipment and a vehicle. And unfortunately, a few people are going to take that misconception to say, well, I can apply for anything I want. I can apply in two categories. I don't need to do an assessment. Well, it's still not true. Each application has to stand on its own. So if the need isn't there for whatever you're applying for, just because you can apply for it doesn't mean it's a very good idea to do so. We still have to hit the needs. And another thing they changed was if you host a regional application, you can apply for your own individual applications as well. So one department can have three applications submitted between a regional, their own personal equipment, and their own personal vehicle grant. And they're all scored independently of each other. Each application stands on its own merits. So we don't have to worry that, you know, they may view it as, oh, we are being greedy. If you have the needs for three applications, to host a regional, to go for your own equipment, go for your own vehicle, if you have needs, apply for it. That's what these programs are all about. Then also, just like last year, you could be part of more than one regional application as long as the individual applications don't ask for the same thing. Anytime you ask for the same thing as another application, both applications could get thrown out. The individual one certainly will be, but they could certainly take a regional application if you go for your own radios plus, you know, you want more radios than what you asked for in a regional or your piece of the regional. They could throw the whole thing out because that just reeks of course, greed, and we want to be about need, not about greed. Just like last year on the regional applications, the matching is the combined population, not each individual department. Less than 20,000 in population covered by an application, it's still 5%. Between 20 and 50,000 in population, it's 10%. And if you go over the 50,000 mark, then it's a 20% match for everybody involved. So even in a regional, if your particular area only covers 5 to 10,000 people, and you'd be an individual match of 5%, as you add people to the regional application, once the total population goes up over 20 or 50,000 mark, then your matching will go up as well. So it will, to be involved in some regional applications, your own personal percentage may go higher, but remember, right, we're at a minimum of 80% off on for anything we apply for. So it's still better than paying 100% of it locally. So nobody should take a look at it and say, well, I want to apply for my own radios at 5% off instead of being part of this regional for where I'd have to put in 20% of it. You know, especially when it comes to communications, it doesn't do any good to be, you know, on your own radio system by yourself. Communications grants should be regional because that's the benefit. It's hard to be interoperable when you're the only one that can talk on a particular frequency. But one of the biggest changes they made for regional applications was that they're probably part of the postponement is now you have to enter the regional statistics. In past years, if you hosted a regional, the only statistics entered in the application, in the statistical portion of the application, was the host. So it was the host population, their call volume and everything. All the rest of the statistics had to be mentioned in the narrative. This year, which we haven't seen yet because we haven't seen the application, but all the numbers that are going to be entered will be for the region, not for the individual host department. So we'll take a little more homework if you are going to do region, make sure that you get every one of the numbers together and those are accurate. A couple of the other changes they made, urban and suburban departments can ask for more than one vehicle for more than one station. If you cover three stations, you can ask for a maximum of three vehicles. Even if you cover more than three stations, it's a maximum of three vehicles worth of vehicles. If you only have one station, of course, you can only ask for one vehicle. But a lot of some departments, you still have to be careful. If you're going to run a 20% match, asking for, you know, 900,000 worth of vehicles, you're looking at saying basically that you've got almost $200,000 in cash to match this award, which is more than half of the amount of money to buy one of the vehicles you're applying for. So of course you have to be careful that, you know, we're saying we have enough money to buy one of these, but we want to take Uncle Sam's money and we want you to buy three. And that goes to one of the misconceptions that a lot of people had about vehicles in general. A lot of people were worried that, oh, you know, urban and suburban departments are going to take all the trucks, and that's where they're all going. And they released the statistics out of the 4,616 vehicle rewards in the past 6 years. 94% of those have gone to rural departments. And most, you know, 4% of the awards, there's only been 191 vehicles go to suburban departments and 77 that go to urban classified departments. The other 4,348 vehicles have gone to rural departments. As I've stated and several of us have noticed, most urban and suburban departments have apparatus replacement plans, so usually have a lower average fleet even with the higher call volume and higher population covered. Most departments in those classifications have their vehicle replacement plan in place and have been successful doing so. Because they realize that every 10 or 15 years they're going to need to replace a truck as front line, and when you've got more than one station, or when you get to the larger cities where you've got 10, 20, or 50 stations, apparatus isn't a problem anymore. It's being covered and handled. So, you know, rural departments have been cleaning up on vehicles because usually they don't have the budgets to afford the trucks. So, we still probably won't have to worry about too many suburban or urban departments getting two or three vehicles in the ward. Some certainly will. The need may very well be there. It's just the more, just like any other project, the more money you ask for, the greater the importance on that assessment to prove that it is a true need and that it can handle be locally. Of course, NFPA compliance is still a major issue, but it's not the only issue. Again, obviously February 2007 here, we had a change on the AIRPAC standard, so even AIRPAC brought just last year technically not compliant with the current standards, but that's not going to make them a priority by any means. Age is still an overriding factor over compliance, so it's still important. You know, even if we do an assessment based on NFPA compliance, technically 2-year-old AIRPACs are not compliant with the current standard, but they're too young, too new to really explain why they need to be replaced. You know, age and condition are certainly going to be overriding factors there. The same things with bunker gear. Unless you've got the drag rescue devices that make it the new standard on bunker gear. Just because they're 2-3 years old doesn't mean, you know, NFPA compliance is a major issue. It's compliance associated with the age. And the call volume and population are going to be more of an upfront consideration now. So they're going to be a little more weighted as far as your population and call volume statistics go. So certainly this is going to key in on assessment-wise, where maybe in past years you could have gotten awarded for more than one project, whether that be bunker gear and AIRPACs or bunker gear and a thermal imager, whatever it happens to be. The lower your population, the lower your call volume, the less we probably want to ask for to make sure the cost-benefit calculation is still as high as we can get it. Certainly, you know, it goes to risks. Not that anybody, you know, it only takes one fire to get somebody hurt and alter their life. So if you handle any calls in a year, the risk is there on every single call. But everyone has to realize that the more population you have, the more calls you run, the greater the risks. You know, we're having more and more fires. The more population we have and the more calls, obviously, we show, you know, the greater the risk that somebody could get hurt. It's more important, not more important, but it's more likely that somebody with bunker gear in the same condition for a higher call volume has a greater risk of getting injured than somebody that doesn't, has the same age bunker gear and doesn't handle too many calls. So it's really going to key on, you know, larger populations, but I don't think that's going to eliminate smaller population departments from anything. Again, any department can get funded for things. It's just how focused we need to take those applications. Of course, which we'll find out once the program guidance comes out, of course. They've been running their workshops now since the end of January. They're certainly they're still going. We've still got another couple weeks worth of those. That it's important to get to those workshops and to hear the changes. Just because the guidance isn't out doesn't mean they basically know what's in the guidance. That's, of course, what they're teaching in their workshops, is what has changed in the guidance, what is the rules, and we need to get that directly from DHS. Of course, it's you know, important to be there, important to go to these workshops and be able to ask of the people that are involved in the program directly for DHS any questions we might have about any of this. And, of course, even if there's something not scheduled in your area, listed on the website, there are other people that teach these classes with the approval of DHS. So contact your local FPS for your region. They may have additional classes that aren't listed on that schedule. So it's certainly important to hear everything directly from them. They have made the PowerPoint presentation available on fireground support.com, but it is just the slides. It's obviously more helpful than not reading it, but certainly not as helpful as being there directly to hear everything directly from the instructor. So certainly, if you still, anyone that has a chance to get to one of those, make sure you get there. But as far as priorities, though, those haven't changed. I mean, we've got the administrative changes that we just talked about who can apply and how many applications they can be involved in. The priorities haven't changed pretty much since 2001. Bunker gear is still the highest priority. Air packs are second highest priority. And, of course, we work in, you know, thermal imagers and hydraulic tools and, you know, RIT packs and things like that. I'll filter down from there. The vehicle matrix has not changed from 2006. So anybody that's waiting on that can still look at last year's program guidance and still see where they might fit in. Everything still has to be, just like any grant application to any grant program there is, it's got to be the right project for the right department for the right reasons. And if it's not, it's probably not going to have a chance of getting funded. We're still, you know, single project, highly focused applications are still the better way to go. You know, we always hear about people that, they got bunker gear and air packs and radios and a thermal imager and some hose and all that. They got that funded. Anybody that has that was more lucky than maybe skilled, because that is not really how you want to design an application. And that's not only my own personal view and professional view for having done it for so many years, that's DHS's view as well, because those are the types of applications they're seeing year after year where somebody has a need for one or more of those things, or they may have a need for all six of those things. But those aren't the applications that are getting passed on to peer review despite those needs. You know, they've told us year after year, and it's in the program guidance, small focused applications that meet the higher priorities are the ones that are going to continually get funded. And I fight that all the time when I'm dealing with people, and they're like, well, this department got all that and this department got all that, but they are the minority. Less than 1% of the projects are funded in that manner. You know, you want to stick to the 99% and make sure that what we're asking for is really what we need, and be able to relay why we need it so badly, and of course, most importantly, why we can't afford it. You know, we have to remember that, you know, as great as our need may be for something, what they're looking at is, if you've recognized that you need it so much, why haven't you done anything about it? Why haven't you funded it locally? We're spending too much time depending on grant programs for basic operations. You know, certainly it's nice if the program's there, and the need is, of course, always there, but the grant programs may eventually go away. Luckily, every year, you know, for the past couple of years, White House has recommended one funding level, and Congress has turned around and raised it back up. We have hit the billion-dollar mark like they planned on many moons ago when the program was initiated. But every year, we managed to get the money back. Congress has been very, very supportive. The fire service has a lot of bipartisan support in Congress. We've got to continue to support our congressional representatives and let them know the need is there. Let them know we applied. Let our county and state officials know we applied, and make sure that they know, and they're passing on the information to our U.S. representatives. Of course, certainly, there's no need to reinvent the wheel. NVFC, IAFF, IAFC, all the major national organizations have lobbyists that are lobbying on our behalf for more funding. But we've got to show it ourselves and not just sit back. And it's as simple as, writing a letter to a local representative. Are they a member of the Congressional Fire Service Caucus? Are they involved in it? If they're not involved in it, why aren't they involved in it? And maybe it's just as simple they don't know about it. Of course they're very busy. They're up there handling the affairs of the country. There's a lot up there. So we need to let their staffers know the importance of it and get their staffers up there and support the CF, Congressional Fire Service Institute, in their mission of educating our legislators on the needs of the fire service. The more they know about it, the more they know about our needs and how expensive those needs are, hopefully the more funding they can put in there. Certainly we're going to see a limit this year. The number of vehicle awards has dropped because the cost of vehicles has gone up. Steel prices have gone up, and now with the EPA emissions changes on motors, the same truck that cost $200,000 last year may cost anywhere from $210 to $220 because of the motor changes. The more expensive the same vehicle, the money stayed the same. There's still only going to be about $135 million for vehicles. So the more vehicles are more expensive, there's going to be less awards. Of course, now that everyone can put in equipment in a vehicle, we'll probably double or triple the number of vehicle awards. That competition is going to be even tighter. But it's definitely better to make sure we put together a competitive application and make sure that the priorities are what's being funded. And they are. The last needs assessment they put out there showed that the AFG was solving the problems that it was designed to solve. Of course, it's going to take a lot more money in there. And that takes the support from us applying every year for everything we need and truly need, but making sure that we do apply. There's a lot of departments have certainly, of course, gotten frustrated, stopped applying, think it's a waste of their time. We've got to show that we still have needs, and just because we don't get funded in a grant program doesn't mean our need goes away. Everybody should be applying every year for something they need. Everybody should be looking. Maybe I should take this regional to make the benefit increase, or maybe I should just apply for bunker gear because that's my single greatest need. Or, we still need a pumper. We may not be very competitive, but we still should put it in there. We can't predict denials. We can't predict awards. But certain project designs, of course, lend themselves to a greater chance of success than others. But most importantly, now that we've got an extra week or so to get in there, everybody should make sure we do an assessment, make sure we get out there, take a look, what do we need in our area, and get an application together. They're not going to approve more funding if they think we don't really need it, and their greatest indication of that is the number of applications. So fire service really needs to get out there and ask for stuff and apply.
Okay. All right, Brett. Well, we're going to be doing a second podcast within a week or so. So if you do have any questions for Brian, please do drop us an email to podcast@firehouse.com, and we'll be sure to get to as many as possible in the next show. And we'll also have a few success stories of those who have won grants in the past. And they'll kind of give us some of the inside information that may have been passed along to them through those who've won in the past as well. So, Brian, thank you for joining us. Thank you to Plym Event for sponsoring this series on grants for 2007 on the Assistant to Firefighter Grant Program. And we look forward to having our second show in just about a week.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned to firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these. Or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.